Let us begin with an episode in this week's parasha, which relates very much to the message of the miracle of Chanukah, which is obviously very timely and appropriate. So begin with the psukim in source number one that discuss the prelude to the sale of Yosef. And the psukim in Perek Lamed Zayin tell us how initially when the brothers saw Yosef approaching, so one said to the other, let's take him and throw him into the pit after killing him, right? The pasuk says, "Va'ata luchu v'nahargeu v'nashlicheu b'achar habaros v'amarnu chaya ru'ach alasu." Okay, so the initial plan that some of the brothers hatched was to kill Yosef on the spot, throw his body into the pit, and claim that some animal had attacked him and killed him. Fine. And then, source number one picks up in Pasuk Chaf Beis, where Reuven hears this plot being hatched. Reuven says, let's not kill anyone. Lo na kenu nafesh. Rather says Reuven, Vayomer lehem Reuven al tishpichu dam, don't spill any blood. Hashlichu oso, throw him el habor hazeh asher bamidbar, into this pit that is here in the desert. V'yad al tishluchavo, don't strike him, don't touch him. So whereas Shimon and Levi, Chazal tells, had planned to murder Yosef on the spot and discard his body in one of the pits, Reuven says, don't touch him, don't spill any blood, throw him into this pit. And the pasuk then concludes, l'ma'an hatzil oso miyadam l'hashivo el aviv. That Reuven's intention was, bedafka, to convince them not to kill Yosef, rather throw him in the pit. And Reuven, thinking to himself, was planning on coming back to the pit to pull Yosef out and bring him back safely to his father. So then, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Pasuk Chav Dalet, we are told, Vayikasher by Yosef el Echav, as Yosef approaches his brothers, they strip off his kesones. And in Pasuk Chav Dalet, Vayikachu, they take him, Vayashlichu oso habor, they cast him into a pit, or into the pit, Vehabor reik en b'mayim. The pit is empty, there is no water in it whatsoever. Now, presumably the pashtus in the pasuk is, there was no water in the pit, meaning had there been water in the pit, they would have drowned him. That was against the whole plan. The plan was, don't kill him, throw him into a pit. So there was no water in the pit, hence they were not deliberately killing him by throwing him into the pit. Fine, so that's what the pasuk simply understood tells us. We then look, though, at a Gemara quoted by Rashi. And this Gemara here is in source number two. There are actually two different statements in the Gemara. We'll read the second paragraph in the Gemara. And this is, again, a Gemara that's cited by Rashi on that pasuk. And what does the Gemara tell us? The Gemara says in the second paragraph, source number two, V'omer Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana says, Darash Rav Nosan Bar Manyume Meshmei Derab Tanchum. This interpretation was offered by Rav Tanchum. Why does the Torah specify the pit was empty, it had no water in it? So we had said, well, the Torah is emphasizing that they didn't drown him by throwing him in. They weren't trying to kill him. So the Gemara asks, by telling me the pit is empty, I know there's no water in it. Why do you have to then emphasize again, empty, no water? Just say empty. I know what that means. Says the Gemara, Elamat Hamalomer Ein Bamayim. Why does the Torah stress there was no water in the pit? Mayim Ein Bo. Yeah, there was no water in there, but there were all sorts of other stuff in there. Avam Nechashim Vakravim Yesh Bo. Snakes, scorpions, tons of good stuff. The pit was squirming. I hate to use such a mundane mushel, but I don't know. A childhood memory comes back. Indiana Jones. Does that? Right, squirming with all sorts of disgusting stuff at the bottom of the pit, right? So there was no water in there, but it was full of snakes, full of scorpions. So this is the Gemara. So the question's obvious. Pasha Pshat question. The question is like this. Look at source number three. This is a Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Kufchof Aleph Amid Aleph. And the Gemara there is discussing when a married man disappears, and Nebuchadnezzar's wife is in Aguna, and there's no body to prove that the guy died. So under what circumstances are you allowed to rest assured that he most likely died, certain enough that the wife can remarry without an actual body to prove his death? Right, that's the discussion of the Gemara here. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, Tan Rabban, the Braisa says, Nafa Lagov Arayos Ein Me'idin Alav. If a guy falls into a pit full of lions, that's not good enough proof he's dead. You can't come back and testify, I saw this man in a pit of lions, or in a den of lions, he's obviously dead. Not necessarily so. Lions might not be hungry, but I don't know. Might not be dead. You can't allow his wife to remarry just simply by the fact that you saw him thrown into a den of lions. But says the Gemara, L'chafura melea nechashim v'krabin. You see a guy thrown into some sort of pit full of snakes and scorpions? Oh, that's definitely death. That for sure means he's dead. Me'idin alav. You can come back and testify to Beis Din, this guy is dead and I know it. Did you see him die? No. So how can you testify? Trust me, if he's in a pit full of snakes and scorpions, he's for sure dead. So his wife can remarry. So one second now, put these two Gemaras together. You're telling me that from the Gemara of Yavamos you see that if a guy is thrown into a pit full of snakes and scorpions, he's for sure going to die. Now you come back to the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, oh, the pit that Yosef was thrown into was full of snakes and scorpions. Now, why exactly did Reuven want to throw him into a pit? What did the Pasuk say? Reuven says to his brothers, oh, don't strike him, don't touch him, don't kill him. Put him into this pit so I can come back and get him later, Reuven's thinking to himself, and save his life. So what kind of pit did you throw him into? A pit full of snakes and scorpions? That's how you're saving his life? That's a death sentence as sure as can be. So what's going on here? How does this make sense? That if Reuven, as the Pasuk tells us, is thinking to himself, I want to save his life, so let me convince my brothers to throw him into a pit, and then you throw him into a pit that's full of snakes and scorpions, well then how are you saving his life? You're killing the guy. So what's going on here? Pasha Pshat, what was Reuven thinking? That's the question that so many Mefarshim are bothered by. So, you look at the Ramban here, source number four. Yeah. Oh, very good. That's exactly Ramban's point. So Ramban says, source number four. Look at source number four. Ramban says, V'im Kain, if this is correct, if there were snakes and scorpions in there, so bear in mind that the plot was to save Yosef by throwing him in there, in Reuven's thinking. So says Ramban, Hayu nechashim v'krabim b'chorei habor. They must have been in these holes that were in the sides of the walls of the pit. So you couldn't see them when you threw the guy in. Or the pit was so deep, you had no clue that there were snakes down there. She'ilu hayiromo sam. Had they seen these snakes? So the Ramban says, he says, had the brothers seen that these snakes were in there and that Yosef would have survived, Ramban says, had they seen the snakes and they had seen that Yosef would have survived that pit, that would have been a clear nace gadol, which would have proven to them that he's so righteous, so pious, they would never have sold him. That would have disproved their theory that he's deserving of death, right? The whole thought process of the brothers was, this guy is deserving of death. He's a rodef. He's trying to get us in trouble with Yaakov Avinu. He's trying to exclude us from Klal Yisrael. They thought he was chayv misa. Had they seen these pits were full of snakes and they threw Yosef in and he survived, that would have been such a nace beyond imagination. They would have realized, the guy's a tzaddik gomer. We can't touch him. He's obviously a pious person. Ramban says the brothers must not have known that there were snakes there. It was so deep they couldn't see. The snakes were in the sides of the pits of the wall, walls of the pit. They couldn't see the snakes. Because that's what Ramban says pshat must be. Oh, coming. Good. Hold on. Good. Very good. Next, Or HaChaim HaKadosh, source number five, a different take on it. Again, this idea of how could they have thrown him into a pit full of snakes if Reuven's plan was to save him, that's not saving him. And Or Ramban's question was, or his perspective was, that had the brothers seen that he would survive such a pit, they never would have sold him. Mr. Or HaChaim HaKadosh has a different take on the Pashup Shat in the Pesukim. Interesting spin. In source number 5, he says, when Reuven says to the brothers, Lo nakenu nafesh, let's not kill anybody. Perish, what Reuven meant was, Lehedja, don't kill the guy outright. That's not nice. Elania garmim lo misa, just kind of like, be the cause of his death. Don't take a hammer and slug him over the head. But, throw him in there and, you'll be a indirect cause of his death. That's what Reuven was telling the brothers, says Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Meaning, the Or HaChaim is saying, they knew there were snakes in there. They saw the snakes. But Reuven perhaps knew that there's no way he's going to win this argument with the brothers to say, don't kill the guy. They were so dead set on killing him, Reuven could not deter them. So what does he say? He says, it's not nice. You're going to strangle him with your own hands. You're going to take a sword and kill the guy directly? That's not nice. Just cause the death. Throw him into the pit. That's bad. That's good enough. But Reuven's own thinking, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, was to save Yosef. How? So he says like this. V'hu Omro, Reuven said, Achakach, afterwards, to his brothers, he says, Al tish b'chudam, don't spill blood. I mean, don't take a sword and stab him. That's not nice. Hashlicho also, throw him into the pit. That will kill him. Zuhai satanas lahem. That's what he's telling the brothers. Don't commit a gory murder. Cause the death, but do it, with your hands clean, so to speak. And what's Reuven's own thinking? V'hu taimo kamos imo, but he had a hidden reason. Shehu latzilo lahashivo el aviv, to save him. How's he going to save him if he's throwing him to a pit full of snakes? Ki yoda na'amana, because he knew. Ki chayas hasada ges hoshlam alo v'lo yiru v'lo yashchisu. Hanechoshim v'hakrabim v'zer Yaakov. Reuven trusted that the animals, the snakes, the scorpions would never touch one of Yaakov's children. Interesting. Meaning, he's telling the brothers, you're going to kill him by stabbing the guy to death, by spilling his blood. That's messy. That's gore. That's not so nice. Here, this will kill him. Put him in the pit, full of snakes. I'll take care of it. But Reuven himself is thinking, I know, these creatures of God can't strike without God's decree. You think God's going to want these snakes and scorpions to kill Yaakov's son Yosef? They're not going to touch him. As Reuven was, it seems like, so convinced in Yosef's piety and his innocence that he never thought for a second that these snakes would have killed Yosef. The brothers were convinced of Yosef's guilt. He's trying to exclude us from Klal Yisrael. He's a Rodef. He's telling Yaakov all these reports about us. They were convinced, throw him in the pit. They'll kill him, those snakes. Reuven, who's convinced of Yosef's piety and his innocence, was convinced in the opposite direction. Throw him in the pit. Snakes will not touch him. So very fascinating two perspectives here from the according to the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. So again, just backing up to recap for a moment. You have the brothers who wanted to kill Yosef on the spot. Reuven wants to save Yosef, so he convinces them, throw him into the pit. The Gemara tells us the pit was full of scorpions and snakes, which would ordinarily be a death sentence. So how does that make sense that Reuven was trying to save Yosef by throwing him into that pit? So Ramban says, they couldn't see the snakes, they were hiding in the holes, they were too deep down, you couldn't see them. And Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, no, they all saw the snakes. The brothers figured, what a great way to kill him. Keep our hands clean, it'll happen to Melo by itself. And Reuven's thinking, Yosef's so innocent, these snakes can't touch him. They're not going to touch him without God's decree against him. And therefore Reuven was thinking, this will save his life rather than end his life. Fascinating, just two ways of viewing the Pesukim and the storyline here. And Nebuch, think about this poor Yosef, 17-year-old kid, being thrown into a pit full of slimy, disgusting snakes and scorpions. Ugh, that's also just a unfortunate scene to imagine. Now, I'll just mention outside a third fascinating pshat. This from one of the Rishonim called Paneach Raza. One of the Perushim on Chumash, Paneach Raza, one of the Rishonim. And he has the following interesting interpretation. I'm sorry? No, not on the sheet. No, I don't think I put this one down. No, this is not on the sheet. So he cites this question from Rav David of Minsberg, I guess someplace in Germany, I assume. Minsberg. How could the Pasuk say that Reuven wanted to save Yosef if he's throwing him to a pit full of snakes? Right, that's our question. So his answer is a little different. Very fascinating answer. He says the following. He says, there were two pits side by side. Look at that pasuk. Pasuk Chav Beis, source number one. Hashlichu so el habor hazeh. Reuven says, throw him into this pit. Why is he specifying this pit? There were two pits, side by side. One was full of snakes, one was not. Reuven says, throw him in this pit, thinking the empty pit. That way, I'll save his life. And that's why he says, El Habor Hazeh Asher Bamidbar. He's saying, throw him into this pit right here. That's like empty like a desert. Empty like a desert. Nothing in it. Desolate, empty pit. Throw him in that pit. But the brothers threw him into a different pit. V'habor reik ein bo mayim, but there was other stuff in that pit. And that's why Panei Achmasa says, when Reuven comes back, v'yashav Reuven al bor, v'hinei ein Yosef babor. Reuven comes back to the pit, and Yosef's not there. Vayikra es bigadav. He tears his clothing. So, interesting question. Reuven comes back to the pit, right? What happened? Think back to the sequence of events. Reuven tells his brothers, don't kill him. Throw him into this pit right here in the desert. Good, they do so. They do exactly that. And then what happens? And then they go and sit down to eat some food, to eat some bread. They see a caravan of Yishma'elim coming. And later, Vayasha of Reuven al Abor, Vahine and Yosef Abor, Reuven comes back to the pit and Yosef's not there. So he tears his clothing. What did he think? But why? If it was empty, why'd he die? Maybe he could have escaped. Maybe he could have gotten out. Probably not, because it's too deep for him to climb out, presumably. So what was he thinking? He realized that Panei Achmasa, they threw him into the wrong pit. They threw him into the other pit. Reuven comes back to his pit, the empty pit. He looks in, still just as empty as before. No one in there. Nothing there. He realizes, where did Yosef go? Oh no, the wrong pit. They threw him into the other pit, full of snakes. He's for sure dead by now. That's why he was so afraid. Reuven comes back to the pit, and Yosef's not there. It's not that he had a havamina that someone had taken him out and sold him. He just realized they didn't put him in the pit I told them to. I was so careful. Habor hazeh, Asher b'midbar. And they didn't listen. They put him in a different pit. The pit full of snakes. He's probably dead by now. That's what he was afraid of. Fascinating, fascinating suggestion in terms of how he reads the psukim. Again, the Sefer Panei Achmasa. Good question. You're saying, according to this pshat, that he thought that they put him into the... Right.
The whole idea that they left and this is his intention to come back, but he split from the brothers in the sense of he wasn't part of...
He didn't see which pit they threw him into.
He wasn't there for it. He said
right.
He put him here, but he
right.
accompanied them and put him in too.
Very good point, because the pasuk never tells us when Reuven departed from the brothers, right? It just says he returned back by himself. Good question. So, Rashi quotes Chazal that he was assisting Yaakov, and we don't know from the Pesukim exactly why he left. What is clear is that he wasn't with the brothers, that he came back by himself. Presumably he wasn't with them when they threw him into the pit, according to this pshat, as you're pointing out. That could be. That could very well be. That could very well be. Interesting suggestion.
I was thinking in terms of, like you said, to answer your question, Bob, that since he started going back and forth, he was... They want to be part of it in the whole, with Chazal speak about the whole thing with the mitzvah, you know, with Bilani, he was trying to do a tshuva, and he owed it to dad and the whole nine yards. So he was distancing himself from the brother, whether, you know, it was his turn to go back out. But I always imagined that he was like distancing himself from the whole scene. But again, that's why I said that perhaps if, in fact, the idea that he specified this pit, he's like, okay, I'm the Bechor, so, right?
Put him here.
Put him here.
And then he walks away.
And he's still, they're going to follow what he said.
But he walks away.
Back,
right.
He left, you know, he didn't want to be part of anything.
Right.
He didn't want to be part of putting him into the pit. Not with, if not with saying, if I didn't want to kill him, he was going to come save him.
He didn't want to be,
She's saying, according to this pshat, he gave the orders. He figured they'd listen. He leaves, coming back later. The kid's not in the pit. He thinks they threw him in a different pit. He realized that the snake probably killed him. Good. So now let's pick up with that idea now that this pit that he was thrown into is full of snakes, full of scorpions. And those are a sure death sentence. And the fact that Yosef survived that pit full of snakes is itself a miracle beyond miracles. So you look now in source number 6, a pasuk in the end of Sefer Bereishis, Parshas Vayechi. After Yaakov's funeral, Yaakov's burial, and Yosef and the brothers return from Eretz Canaan to Mitzrayim, and the pasuk says, "Vayiru ache Yosef kemes aviyim." The brothers of Yosef see their father died. Vayomer, they say, "Lo yistemenu Yosef." Yosef might hate us now, and he's going to repay us all the evil that we did to him. And the question's obvious: what happened now? They buried Yaakov. They escorted him to his final resting place. They mourned him. They eulogized him. All of a sudden, now they see he died. What do you mean, Vayiru? They see that he died. It's obvious he died. This happened already a while ago. So the Medrash Tanchuma, and this is cited by the Balaturim on that pasuk, Medrash Tanchuma, source number 7, says the following: what do you mean, Vayiru Ache Yosef Kimes Aviem? They see something, that their father died. Umaro Ata. What do they see suddenly, says the Medrash? Shepachadu, they're now terrified. Says the Medrash, Ela Shara'u, they saw, Be'ez Shechazu Mekvuras Avihem, on the way back from the funeral, Rosh Halach Yosef, they saw Yosef went, Levarech Al Oso Habar. He goes back to that same pit that they threw him into, to make a bracha by that pit. Sheshlichu Echav Besocho. Ubirech Alev, he makes a bracha by that pit. What bracha? Says the Medrash, Chayev Adam Levarech Al Makom Shenasa Lones. A person has a chiv to make a bracha when he encounters a place where a nes occurred to him. He says, Baruch ha-mokom sha'os l'nes ma-mokom hazeh. So Yosef, heading back from Eretz Canaan to Mitzrayim, passes the boar. He's like, oh, hold on, guys. We'll just take a few minutes here. Go check that this pit. Remember that pit? We're going to go check it out. He goes to the boar, and he stands there, looks down at the pit, and he did so to make a bracha. Shavach v'adot ha-kadosh baruch. What a miracle. I survived the snakes in the pit. The brothers see him going back to the pit. What are they thinking? They're thinking, uh-oh, he's reliving those days, and he's now planning his revenge. He hasn't forgotten what we did to him. This is not looking good for us. They suddenly see that their father's gone, and now Yosef is remembering all that happened. Now they're in trouble. Now they're afraid. So says the Medrash Tanchuma. So, the Meshech Chachma, this week's parsha, in our parsha, on this pasuk, V'habor reik em b'mayim, sees in this a fascinating idea. It says like this. He says, if you had to ask me what was the nes of this past, I don't know, 20, 30 years of Yosef's life. I mean, just think about what happened to Yosef in the past, whatever it was, number of decades. A 17-year-old boy sold as a slave into Egypt, makes his way up to the position of viceroy of Egypt, the most powerful position under the king. That's a miracle. Did he make a bracha when he got to the throne? Did he make a bracha when he became the wealthiest man in the country? Oh no, nothing there. When does he make his bracha? Oh, when he walks by that pit where the brothers threw him in before he was sold as a slave. That's when you make your bracha. Everything else that happened is not an ace? I mean, who would have thought of it? Rags to riches like this. This is an unbelievable life story. So Meshech Chachma says like this. He says as follows. Source number 8. He says, whoever sees a place where a nes occurred to him makes a bracha, baruch she'asa l'nes b'makom hazeh. Says the pshat is like the Avudraham says, dafka she'yotza miderech hateva. The bracha of baruch she'asa l'nes b'makom hazeh is a bracha that's made not on the unexpected, but on the supernatural. The above Derech HaTeva occurrence. Yeah, Yosef going from slave to throne is pretty cool. That's pretty close to fantastic. It's not impossible. It's not beyond the rules of nature, right? For the rest of the Egyptians in the country. Yeah, he happened to have a skill. He interpreted the dreams well. He was a great insight, great advisor. Paro liked him and they hit it off and that was it. It was perhaps unforeseen, not likely, not expected, but it's not a miracle. When do you make this bracha? On that which is beyond the rules of nature. Oh, you were in a pit with serpents and snakes and scorpions and you came out alive, that's pretty supernatural. That deserves a bracha. Says the Meshech Chachma now, Chanukah too. Fascinating connection. He says, B'had mevarch al ner Chanukah, we make the bracha on what? On the lighting of the candle. Now, was that the entire miracle of Chanukah? The miracle of Chanukah was you had the small band of Jews who were capable of overcoming the most powerful military in the world, the Greek Empire. That's a miracle. That's pretty amazing. Whereas the Rambam says, these were people who were suppressed, oppressed, persecuted, and they restored their kingship. Rambam writes in Hilchos Chanukah, Chazra Malchus LeYisrael Yisrael Masayim Shana. The Chashmonaim seized the throne from Greece, and for 200 plus years, the Jews were rulers of their own destiny for the rest of Bayis Sheni. That's also pretty amazing. We don't make a bracha on that. What's the bracha? L'hadlik Nerashal Chanukah, Sha'as Hanisim on the candles. Why? Says the Meshech Chachma, because the other stuff, pretty remarkable. The military victory, the kingship, but it has that... It wasn't supernatural, exactly. It works. You know, guerrilla strategies, you know, hiding out in the caves, you knew the territory, you're fighting defensive war for your own country, your own people. You can explain it away. The historians do it all the time, right? Six-day war, they do that all the time. They explain everything away. It wasn't supernatural. It was within the rules of nature. Oh, but the Pach HaShemen to burn for 8 days. It might have been somewhat minor in the overall scheme of the story of Chanukah, so to speak, as far as the national implications for the Jewish people. But that was the one event that was supernatural. Oh, that's where our bracha is. Sha'as Nisan L'Avaseinu, L'Hadlik Nerashal Chanukah, you make the bracha on the supernatural. And so Meshech Chachma says, the Ikar HaNes, he says, was the Nitzachon, the military victory over the Malchus of Antiochus. It was the Jews being Mekabel Melucha for 200 plus years. But the supernatural was the Nes of the Pach HaShemen. So suggests the Meshech Chachma. And he says, and the same is true by Yosef. Right? The Ikar Nes says by Yosef was that this kid was pulled out of the pit, sold to Mitzrayim as a slave, worked his way up to the throne of Mitzrayim. That's the Ikar Nes, he says. That's the real story here. You know, it's what really impacted the Jewish people. That was the story. That was the miracle. But the bracha that Yosef makes, no, that's on the supernatural only. On the pit. So Meshech Chachma sees in this little story of Yosef a parallel, beautiful parallel, to the story of Chanukah. It was the real miracle in both instances was the rags to riches, the military victory, the rise to the throne. The seemingly incidental miracle was the survival of the pit and the Pach HaShemen, the oil that burned for 8 days. But the bracha in both cases was made on the supernatural, on the oil, on the pit. So writes the Meshech Chachma. Now, what's fascinating is, look back for a moment, source number two, that Gemara and Shabbos, which we began with, that indicated that the pit was empty of water, but full of snakes. And how interesting that the previous two lines in that Gemara are a seemingly unrelated statement made by the same person, Rav Kahana, quoting Rav Nosson bar Manume in the name of Rabbi Tanchum. Seemingly two unrelated statements at first glance. The second statement was the pit was empty of water but full of snakes and scorpions. The first statement was that a Ner Shel Chanukah, a menorah, has to be within 20 amos off the ground, not too high, or else you can't see it. Said by the same person, seemingly unrelated, but is it really unrelated? According to Meshech Chachma, there is a very strong parallel between what happened to Yosef and the pit with the snakes and the Ner Chanukah. Both represent the supernatural components of a much broader, miraculous story. The Ner of Chanukah and the pit full of snakes. So interesting connection there. Interesting connection that the same person in the Gemara, Rav Tanchum, says seemingly two unrelated statements, one after the other, but as Meshech Chachma points out, they very, very much are very much related. They're both two seemingly minor incidents, which are part of a bigger, broader, more impactful story, but these two incidents are the supernatural miracles in both. And now, as the Meshech Chacham on the other side of the page, you'll see how he points that out. He says that the same person, Rabbi Tanchum, mentions these two statements to show us that in both the story of Chanukah and in Yosef, the real miracle was the victory, the malchus, the royalty, the rule, the throne. But the bracha in both cases is made on the supernatural component of the miracle, the survival of the pit and the Pach Hashem and burning for so long. And now to add just one more point on that last idea. So Meshech Chachma has now pointed out to me that in the miracle of Chanukah, story of Chanukah, the real miracle was the military victory, the fact that the Jews now reclaimed the throne and control of Eretz Yisrael for so many years, two centuries plus. But we make the bracha on that one supernatural miracle of the Pach HaShemen. So just to take that a step further, Pnei Yeshua asks a famous question. Who even needed that miracle altogether? If the real story here is the conquest of the Greek Empire, the military victory against the Greek soldiers, if the real story here is Jewish control over Beis Hamikdash, over Eretz Yisrael, yeah, the supernatural part was the oil burning for 8 days. But who needed that? Who needed that? As Pnei Yeshua even asks in source number 11, Pnei Yeshua on Masechah Shabbos asks the following basic question. L'chora yesh l'tzmo, you can ask, kol Torah chanes zeh lama. Who needed this miracle? To light the menorah? You know what he says? When everyone is tameh, and you need to do something for the tzibur, tumah is not a problem. What was their issue? They couldn't find a pure flask of oil that was tahar. Everything was contaminated by the Greeks. So use a tameh flask. You'll tell me, aghast, how could you use tameh flask of oil in the menorah? That's tameh, it's tameh, it's tameh. The answer is that when the entire tzibur is tameh, you're allowed, for the sake of a carbon tzibur, or for the avoda on behalf of the tzibur, to use something tameh. The words of the Gemara are, tuma hutra b'tzibur. If everyone's tameh, and you got to do something for everyone, you know, a communal avoda in the mikdash, then do it even when you're tameh. So ask Pnei Yeshua. So use a tameh flask of oil. You have to have a miracle god that the one tar flask lasted 8 days? Why is that necessary? It wasn't necessary. And yet that's what we make the bracha on. That unnecessary miracle is the one thing that the bracha of Chanukah is all about. So yeah, it's supernatural, but it wasn't critical at all. Why make such a big deal out of it? Like, why did God even do it? Says Pnei Yeshua, you know why? L'kach nira d'ikir ha-neis lo na'asa ela lehodiyah lehem chibas hamakam aleihem. You're right, it wasn't necessary. It's God showing us how much he loves us. God did a supernatural miracle on our behalf, not because it was necessary. We could have lit a tameh flask of oil in the menorah. But God wants to show us how much he loves us. So he bedafka performs an unnecessary, supernatural miracle just to say, I love you. Beautiful thought. And if Chaim Shalevitz has the exact same thought on another pasuk in this week's parasha, and we'll wrap it up with this. When Yosef is sold, the pasuk says there was a caravan of Yishma'elim coming from Gilad, and their camels are loaded with nechos and sri and lot, all sorts of spices, sweet-smelling spices. So Rashi comments, who cares what the camels are carrying? Think it makes a difference? Rashi says, you know why? To show us the schar that tzaddikim receive. Because these Yishma'elim ordinarily carry stinky stuff. Itran, naft, the really foul-smelling stuff. But for Yosef, these Yishma'elim are bringing good-smelling besamim so he can, enjoy. So Chaim Shalevitz says, come on a second here. Nebuchadnezzar, this poor 17-year-old kid, he's thrown into a pit full of snakes and scorpions, narrowly survives with his life intact. Now he's being shipped off into slavery for years without seeing his beloved father or family forever, for years and years and years. And you're saying, oh, this is his schar. Enjoy the smell. That doesn't seem right. There's something missing there, isn't there? That's not a schar. That's Nebuch. This poor guy's kid's being sold as a slave. What kind of schar is that? That's schar. You think he cares? As he's being tied up and tossed into the back of the wagon and shipped off to Egypt to slavery for the rest of his life, as far as he can think? You think he has even a half minute to enjoy the besamim that's smelling so wonderfully? Poor kid's probably crying, bawling, sobbing. Oh, it smells good in here. That's going to make him happy. What are you thinking? Says Reb Chaim Shalev, it's a beautiful vort, a similar idea. He says, you know what the pshat is? The pshat is that even when someone is suffering, even when he is in such distress, such sorrow, but God is just giving him a little love tap, a little message of love. I'm still thinking of you. I'm still here. Don't give up. I'm still looking out for you. I'm with you even now. It's not going so well right now, but I'm holding your hand as you go through it. Now, the message of the sweet-smelling spices is, don't be misya'ish. Don't think I've given up on you entirely. Don't think I've turned around, closed my eyes, and I'm never looking at you again. No, chas v'shalom. I'm with you even now. Even now, I'm still watching you. That's the message of the besamim. So, Reb Chaim Shmulevitz ties that into what we just said from the Pnei Yeshua. Every so often, God does something extra. A little added, unnecessary touch of love. The besamim wasn't necessary. It's not changing the facts on the ground. He's being sold as a slave regardless. But it's a way of God saying, I'm with you, I see you, I'm watching you, I love you. Hanukkah, the battle was critical that they won. The kingship was critical that they got. The Pach HaShemen wasn't necessary. It's a little extra. That's a way of God saying, I love you, I'm thinking of you, don't forget, I'm always here with you. That's the message of the Nes of Hanukkah, and the message, of course, of the Nes that occurred to Yosef, and how we always look at the Lamala Menateva to find how Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us and reassuring us no matter what's happening in our lives at the time. Thank you all. Have a wonderful evening.